Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Kamsa pa pabatik
saktyam.
Tava chanaka dundube. Devakya ashtamo garbo.
Devakya ashtamo garbo.
Nastri bhavitum arhati.
Nastri bhavitum arhati.
Iti sanchintayan chutva.
Iti sanchintayan chutva.
Devakya darika vachah.
Devakya darika vachah.
Api hanta gata shankas. Tarhi tanno nayo bhavet. Kamsa papa matik sakyam. Tava chanaka dundube. Devakya ashtamo garbo.
Devakya ashtamo garbo.
Nastri bhavitum arhati.
Nastri bhavitum arhati.
Iti sanchintayan chutva.
Iti sanchintayan chutva.
Devakya darika vachah.
Devakya darika vachah.
Api hanta gata shankas.
Api hanta gata shankas.
Tarhi tanno nayo bhave.
Tarhi tanno nayo bhave.
Kamsaha.
Kamsaha.
King Kamsa.
Kamsa.
Papamatihi. Very, very sinful. Having a polluted mind. Sakyam, friendship. Tava, your. Cha, also. Anakadundubehe. Of Vasudeva. Devakya. Of Devaki. Ashtamakgarbha. The eighth pregnancy. Na, not. Stri, a woman. Bhavitum arhati. Is possible to be. Iti, in this way. Sanchintayan. Considering. Shrutva. And hearing. This news. Devakya of Devaki. Darika vachah. The message from the daughter. Api, although there was. Hanta gata ashankah. There is a possibility that Kamsa would take steps to kill this child. Tarihi, therefore. Tat,
that incident.
Naha, for us. Anoyak bhavet,
may not be very good.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kamsa is both a great diplomat and a very sinful man. Therefore, having heard from Yogamaya, the daughter of Devaki, that the child who will kill him has already been born somewhere else, having heard that the eighth pregnancy of Devaki could not bring forth a female child, and having understood your friendship with Vasudeva, Kamsa, upon hearing that the purificatory process has been performed by me, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, may certainly consider all these points and suspect that Krishna is the son of Devaki and Vasudeva. Then he might take steps to kill Krishna. That would be a catastrophe. Purport. Kamsa knew well that Yogamaya was, after all, the maidservant of Krishna and Vasudeva and Vishnu. The maidservant of Krishna and Vishnu. And that although Yogamaya had appeared as the daughter of Devaki, she might have been forbidden to disclose this fact. Actually, this was what happened. Gargamuni argued very soberly that his taking part in performing the reformatory process for Krishna would give rise to many doubts, so that Kamsa might very soon take severe steps to kill the child. Kamsa had already sent many demons to attempt to kill this child, but none of them had survived. If Gargamuni were to perform the purificatory process, Kamsa's suspicions would be fully confirmed, and he would take very serious steps. Gargamuni gave this warning to Nanda Maharaj. Hare Krishna. So Gargamuni is the well-wisher of Krishna, of Nanda Maharaj, of Vasudev and their wives. He's concerned of the danger posed by Kamsa. So he's a great sage, Muni. And here we spell the name as one word. That's just our Iskanism, because we have a devotee called Gargamuni. Yeah, but it's not one word, it's two words. Muni's a title. And we have a painting, I think in this volume, of Gargamuni. It looks just like our devotee Gargamuni. That was intentional. Yeah. Inside joke. But actually, Muni is the title. He's a Muni. He's a great sage. He's supposed to know everything. Still, he's also another victim of Yogamaya. He's under the sway of Yogamaya. And therefore, he also is afraid of Kamsa. Rishis aren't afraid of small tyrants like Kamsa. Small tyrant. He's just a vassal of Jarasandha. Who's Jarasandha? Sages can laugh in his face. But Gargamuni is a sage under the sway of Yogamaya. And under the sway of Yogamaya, devotees can even forget that Krishna is God. It's not easy to forget that Krishna is God. Not easy to forget Krishna in any way. The gopis try. They are so upset with Krishna, leaving them and going away to Mathura and making new friendships with the ladies there. This is very discouraging for young girls, that they be left aside for other girls. Yes, it's still. So they're really angry at Krishna, and they're saying to each other, let's forget about Krishna, let's talk about something else. But they can't do it. They can't forget Krishna. And neither can any of these devotees. They do forget something about Krishna, which is actually a very important fact about him, that he's God. We better not forget that. Under the influence of the other Maya, we may forget that Krishna is God. Under the influence of the material Maya, we may think, I'm here in the Krishna consciousness movement, and I'm doing the puja, but, is he really God? We may doubt it, or we may forget it. Then we're in trouble. This is not Yogamaya. When we neophytes are not fully convinced and are not very aware of the fact that Krishna is God. God means supreme controller and knower of everything. There isn't anybody else like that. There are some people who have a lot of control, and because they have so much money and they're tentacles of influence go out into so many directions, and he controls so many people that got apparently unlimited influence. Dictators, presidents of huge corporations, they seem to have a lot of power. But that's limited. There's no person you can think of beside the personality of Godhead who actually controls everything, everywhere. Beyond this universe, into millions of other universes, he's absolutely in control of everything. Nothing happens that contradicts his desire. And he is also aware of everything. Someone may have control, but he doesn't really know what's going on. He has limited information. How much information can he handle? Even if he has, you know, 10 computers on his desk, all linked up to the internet at once, how much information can his little brain process? You know, he may be acquiring, he may have spy satellites up in space collecting information from, maybe he's the president of the country, and there are dozens of spy satellites looking at the other countries, even peering into the houses, you know, these spy satellites. And he may have tons of information coming to him every hour, but how much of it can he handle? How much information can his brain process? So, except for the personality of Godhead, no one can know everything. Even if he has some technology for accessing everything, he doesn't have the intelligence to process it. Even the demigods, they're vibhuta. They're called vibhuta. That means of vast intelligence. Relatively speaking, they're also called amara, immortal, but they're only relatively immortal. They live for hundreds of millions of years. So from our scale, that might as well be forever. You know, for us, you know, to experience from 1 year to the next is a long time. So if we had to think in the future for 300 million years, it might as well be forever. So the demigods, relatively speaking, to our framework, they're immortal. And they're vibhuta, omniscient, all-knowing, relative to us, because we're so little-knowing. You know, a person who knows nothing, or a person who knows little, when a smarter person shows some amazing thing, he thinks it's magic, or it's mystic powers. It's just that he doesn't understand how something's done. You know, the magician pulls the rabbit out of the hat. You know, he had the rabbit hiding somewhere under the tablecloth or something. And there's, you know, mirrors or some trick by which the audience doesn't see how the rabbit got pulled out. There's an explanation. It's not actually mystic powers. You know, it's just a trick, an illusion, a visual illusion. But the less intelligent people who don't know how it's done think it's magic. So we are less intelligent. We think the demigods know everything. Therefore, we call them vibhuta. And they do know a lot. They do live a long time relative to us. And they do certainly know a lot relative to us. That's just because we live so short. We're living in Martyr Loka, where the main activity in this place is dying. Yeah, the place is named after what it's prominent for. Palm Springs, you know, it's a place with lots of palm trees. And Martyr Loka is a place where there's lots of dying. Yeah. What is it? In Sanskrit. Bahulena Vyapadishyate, or something like that. That a thing can be named. No, that doesn't have to be, but it can be named according to what's prominent in it. Pradanyena. Okay. Vyapadesha. Bhavanti, yeah. So things are named very often according to what's prominent in them. Martyr Loka is the place where death is going on very very often. You know, like flies live for a few days, die, take birth again. Who knows as what. So we live for 100 years, maybe. Maybe only 45 years. Die, take another birth. That's like a blink of the eye for demigods. It's like the fleas that are dying every few minutes. That's what we look like to the demigods. You know, these people down there, all they ever do is die. So relative to us, they seem to be immortal, and they seem to be omniscient, and they do know a lot. A demigod, just a run-of-the-mill demigod, sitting in his office, you know, the bureaucratic position. He's in charge of the left finger. This is right, the right pinky. Yeah. But he's in charge of every single right pinky all over the universe. To be able to control with his own intelligence, you know, with his own brain power, everybody's right pinky. He must have very vast, broad consciousness. Be aware of that much, even in one small department. But he knows it all over the universe. He knows everybody's little right finger. And he's got the power. Okay, so-and-so over there, you know, his karma says, his jataka says, that finger's going to be paralyzed. Okay, time to paralyze it. And by his power, by his willpower, it's paralyzed. The demigod has vast control and vast knowledge, but it's relative only to us. It looks like great and mystic to us, because we have so little power and so little knowledge. But there's only one person who actually knows everything and is actually in control of everything. Anvayad itarateshu charteshu abhigyak swarat. He's abhigya, all-knowing, and swarat, independently in control of everything. Anvayad itarateshu, both directly and indirectly. Anvayad means indirectly, and itarata means otherwise. The opposite of indirectly is directly. So indirectly and directly. He knows everything and he controls everything. Indirectly through the demigods and other agents. He controls everything through the demigods. And he is the greatest, he possesses all transcendental knowledge through the sages. The sages are the repository of knowledge. The demigods are the repositories of control. Deputized to them by the Supreme Lord. Where did I read? This morning we were chanting the chapter, Narada Visits Dwarka. And Krishna is referred to by Shukadeva in that chapter as Adi Rishi, Rishi Puranaha, the original ancient Rishi. That's Krishna. You know, because it was described, Shukadeva was describing how Krishna was showing respect to Narada, the great sage. But he, Krishna, is the Rishi Puranaha, the first of all Rishis, because his incarnation is Naranarayan Rishi. He's the Rishi Puranaha Narasaka. That's what the verse said. Friend of Nara, because he's Narayana, Naranarayana. And they're just expansions of Krishna, actually Krishna and Arjuna. So if Naranarayana is supposed to be the original Rishi, then Krishna must be the original Rishi, because he's the origin of Naranarayana. That's proven in the description given by Suta Goswami in the third chapter of the first canto. Turiye Dharmakala Sarge Naranarayana Rishi Budva at opashamaupetam chakara dusharam tapaha. In the fourth of the incarnations on the list, Naranarayan appeared. And they performed great austerities in meditation. So they're listed as incarnations. And then at the end of the whole list, Shukadev draws his conclusion, ete chamshakalak pumsa krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. These are all expansions and expansions of expansions of the personality of Godhead, but Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. That is what Jiva Goswami indicates to be the Paribhasha Sutra of the Bhagavatam. You're studying Paribhasha Sutras in your grammar class. This is the Paribhasha for the Bhagavatam, the rule of interpretation by which we understand all other statements properly. That whatever is said about someone, just like Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Arjuna went to visit Lord Mahakala in the covering of the universe, outside the sphere of the universe, in the outer covering. They went to worship to visit. That was to get back. Who was up there? No, the sons of Devaki were there.
Sons of the Brahmana.
Sons of the Brahmana. Yeah, that Arjuna couldn't protect. 10 sons. And he said, "Oh, you know, I've been waiting for you." And there was discussion back and forth, and the impression you get from the discussion is that Mahakala considers himself superior, and Krishna and Balaram or Krishna and Arjuna are his expansions. But we know that's not exactly correct. That's just they were talking like that. But we have our paribhasha, our rule of interpretation, that all the other manifestations are expansions of Krishna. And Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Everything else that's said in the Bhagavatam can be adjusted to be understood in a way that agrees with that basic rule of interpretation. And those who don't do that, they're disagreeing with Jiva Goswami. They want to have their own way of reading the Bhagavatam. Let them do it. They can read the Bhagavatam and see Krishna as just another incarnation of Narayan. Some people do. Some Mayavadis read the Bhagavatam and still think the Bhagavatam is teaching ultimately impersonal liberation. Yeah, they can twist various interpretations out of the Bhagavatam. But we are following Srila Jiva Goswami, who insists that this Ete Chapshakalak statement is pivotal and everything should be adjusted, or our understanding should be adjusted in agreement with it. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. And if we don't agree with that, or if we're not fully convinced of that, then our devotional service will be very weak. We can practice, we can go through the motions of doing some service for Krishna for various reasons. We have some little faith, so we want to serve God, and Krishna's supposed to be God. Okay, I'll believe it. Yeah, back in my intelligence, I have doubts, but okay, I'll believe it. And we get good food here, and there's good friends, and there's benefits. So I'll go along with it. But that's not a solid basis for devotional service. Eventually, you'll fail with that attitude. You won't be able to last forever. Doing devotional service without strong conviction and faith. We have to be fully aware and fully convinced that Krishna is God and everything that means. We have to understand what God is. Not just Allahu Akbar. God is great. But we have to understand how God is great. That's what the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam are for. We shouldn't ignore them. They are to teach us 2 things. That God is great, and 2, that the trying to enjoy this material world is foolish. Those 2 things are what the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam basically teach. We need to know and be convinced of Krishna. Krishna is God, and we have to understand what it means to be God. People can understand that God is all-powerful and all-knowing, and then still think that God is, his purpose is just to fulfill my material desires, to be my order supplier. Give me this day my daily bread and some butter to put on it, and, I could use a new car too. That's not a proper... you understand God is all-powerful and all-knowing, but you still think he's your slave. And he has nothing better to do but to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to bake bread for you. So we have to have a proper understanding and a proper attitude toward Krishna. We're in the process of being trained up. Maybe we're in some way under the influence of Yogamaya. Yogamaya is letting us stay here. We're sort of guests of Yogamaya here in the Dham. Tentative guests. And we shouldn't be, arrogantly thinking that, we're transcendental and we can forget that Krishna's God because everybody else does here anyway. Yeah. We don't have to observe a codicil. Nobody does that here. We don't have to follow any rules. We don't have to think of Krishna as God. Krishna's not God. He's one of our, he's our family member. Well, okay, but we're not on that level yet, most of us. You know, we haven't fully come under the shelter of Krishna's divine energy. Mahatma Nastumam Partha Daivim Prakriti Mahashrita. These are the great souls who have fully taken shelter of Krishna's divine energy. But to be honest, we haven't yet done that if we're still taking shelter of his other energy to some extent. Or we've got some selfish motives or some hesitancy, some doubts, some misunderstandings, some hostility in our hearts, then we haven't fully taken shelter of Krishna's divine energy. And therefore we can't count on Yogamaya letting us get away with you know, laxity and forgetting that Krishna's God. We can't get away with it. So on the one hand, here, the participants in Krishna's leelas are all being influenced by Yogamaya to put aside the idea that Krishna is God. And even Garga Muni, the big sage from the big city, he's also worrying, oh, Kamsa could come and try to kill Krishna. This would be a catastrophe. He's thinking like that because he's under the influence of Yogamaya. Someday we may also be like that, but we have to work for it. We can't prematurely claim the privilege of the immunity granted by Yogamaya to forget that Krishna's God. We don't have that privilege yet. We have to study how Krishna is God. And that's what this Bhagavatam, study of the Bhagavatam, is for, first of all. Now, we're reading 10th Canto. But actually, we're just going to go up to chapter 13 and then jump back to the first canto. We'll be back in the first canto eventually, by the end of this year. By the end of next year. Okay, Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, yes, Prabhu. I never put my glasses on.
I'm wondering, I've actually kind of always wondered, what kind of pivotal statements do other sampradayas and even the Maya bodies have? I mean, it seems to me that it's feasible and possible that they have their own pivotal statements.
Well, the Mayavadis have these Mahavakyas that Shankaracharya picked out of the Upanishads. I think there are four of them, and therefore there's four main branches of the Shankara Sampradaya. Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, two others. These are their pivotal statements. But they take them out of the Upanishads, because their first Shastra is the Vedanta, and the Vedanta's commentary on Upanishads. So they go to the Upanishads to find their pivotal statements. Balava Sampradaya, Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama. That's their mantra, that's their pivotal statement. It's a nice statement. Yeah. But it's sort of made up. I didn't see it in any book. Yeah. Balabhacharya made it up, that mantra. It's okay. You know, so they have their pivotal statement, and others probably have theirs too. Their pithy summaries. Either coming out of Shastra or just made up. Well, we deal with the Mahavakyas and the Mayavadis, and other Acharyas and other Sampradayas have shown how the Mahavakyas, these are not the real Mahavakyas, the Tattvamasi and so on. We read about that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya is discussing this matter. But I don't think we're going to pick a fight with Balabhacharya Sampradaya or other Vaishnavas. Yeah, let them... They're chanting some sort of Krishna mantra, and it may be made up, but we're not going to fight with them. If they're bona fide sampradaya, we'll mind our own business. Let them mind their business. We don't go out of the way to go get in fights with other Vaishnavas unnecessarily. Of course, there's this renegade group, disciple of Bhakti Vinod, who made up his own mantra. Was it? Nitai Gaur Hare Sham Bolo Hare Krishna Hare Ram. Because they decided, Babaji decided that we shouldn't chant Hare Krishna out loud. That's forbidden. We shouldn't in public chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's for private meditation. So he made up this other mantra. Bhaktivinoda Thakur rejected him for that. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur got into constant fights with this other person. So much so that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to ask Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to leave Puri for some time. Because he was so much on the case of this, you know, person who made up a mantra. So in some cases, we consider it offensive, you know, these concocted mantras. Apasiddhanta, Rasabhas. And sometimes, so, yes, but normally if, you know, if it's an authentic sampradaya, and you know, even though they made up something, but at least it's meant to glorify Krishna, then we don't bother them. But the Mayavadis we pick apart. And we have, you know, we have philosophical arguments why their so called Mahavakyas are not really the essential statements. Or and they misinterpret them. Is that okay? Yes, sir.
I used to see that the Christians, they have the main mentality, the understanding that they have is that they are depending on God. So it's not, many are materialistic, they say they're Christians, but actually they're materialistic, and
yes,
they want to have God as their other supplier. But those who are actually sincere and genuine, they see God as their shelter, and they depend on Him in every respect. So isn't it our position too? We are under the control of Yoga Maya, and then we start thinking, I am Father, Mother, I am Perfect Krishna, or I am His friend.
Yes, that is good, to have some idea of being dependent on God. So Christianity is not a bad idea. Who is it? Somebody called Chesterton said, Christianity is a great idea. The only problem is no one's ever actually tried it. Yeah. If you can actually depend on God. But if you're just taking and not giving in exchange, that's very immature. That's the position of an infant. Just takes and doesn't give anything back. Takes service from the parents and doesn't think about serving the parents. So if we have any kind of mature sentiment, we should start thinking about doing some service to God since we are taking so much from Him. You know, to give something back to Him, some acknowledgement at least. So devotional service doesn't really begin until you start thinking about doing something to give back to God. Otherwise, because there's no, being God's child, there's no rasa that covers that. Well, you can consider it, you know, those, the children of Krishna in Dwarka, we were reading about them this morning, they're in the Sakya, in the Dasya Rasa. But because they're thinking of themselves as Krishna's servants, not just like infants, thinking that, you know, my daddy is giving me everything and that's his business. You know, he just exists to give me everything. But Krishna's sons in Dwarka aren't thinking like that. Their attitude is the attitude of Dasya Rasa. There is no baby rasa, you know, to be God's baby. You know, and God is daddy who gives you everything. There is no such rasa. Yeah. So devotional service begins when you start thinking of yourself servant. And the higher rasas are built on that. So Christianity is nice, and some Christians actually think themselves servant of God, and they start thinking, you know, why should I just take and take and take? Some Christians think, you know, develop a more mature attitude. That's good.
There is no such a rasa of being only dependent. You have to serve God.
Just dependence is not the basis for a rasa. The prema cannot be founded just on a sense of dependence. There has to be a sense of service. Because you have shanta ras. So, yeah, there's shanta ras, where you just bask in the glory of God and you don't do anything. You know, that's the minimum, shanta ras. I don't know, maybe you could say that the person who is completely dependent on God and glorifies God but has no sense of service, you could say maybe he's in shanta ras at the best. Yeah, sure. Yes, Mother.
I'm having one thought that I know it's not fully complete.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just thinking that at my stage where I'm not really doing devotional service, but I'm just following the orders of the spiritual master. I mean, I'm saying I have no honest devotion for Krishna, but
okay.
I'm just trying.
Yes.
Is it maybe fortunate to not have enough intelligence to understand how great God is, because then out of fear for his like opulence, I wouldn't be able to.
Well, no, I don't agree with that idea.
No,
that better to, better to be in ignorance.
That's what I'm trying,
well, let me say why I don't agree with it. Yeah,
okay.
why we shouldn't? You know, you're proposing why shouldn't we just be in ignorance of God's greatness, because it'll be very scary to know about his opulence,
yeah,
and it'll just terrify us. And what's the good of it? But Krishna summarizes his greatness in the last verse of the, I think, third chapter of the Gita, Bhoktaram Yogatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Yes, ma'am? Okay. Bhoktaram Yogatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shanti Vichati. But there's three things there. If those who know me, these three things about me, they attain real peace. They have knowledge and they're peaceful. The three things to know is that Krishna is the enjoyer of everybody's work. Everyone's working for him. Second thing is that he's proprietor of everything. He owns everything. That's why we have to work for him, because he owns the whole company. Three, but third is significant. He's everyone's well-wishing friend. If you only know the first two, that's scary. Krishna is a supreme dictator. You know, and he could bite your head off or do whatever he wants. That's scary. But if you also know the third thing, that is your best friend, and he only wishes you to be happy and have, you know, to be, he wishes your welfare. And if you know and believe that, then there's no reason to be afraid. We're afraid because we have partial knowledge, but we should not be ignorant. We should have know all three things. Also know that Krishna is our best friend. Okay. Okay. Hi, Grandpa.
There is a definition of the muni, like in Sanskrit, Tarka Pratishtha Sutra Vividham. So the Garga Muni was the such kind of muni.
Which kind? How do you explain what that description is? This is from Mahabharata. It's not definition of muni, but it's a statement that refers to munis. Yes. So what does it say? Nacha sav rishir yatamat. It's rishi, the word is used. Nacha sav rishir yasya matam nabinam. Nobody's considered a rishi unless he has a different opinion. Of course, that's not a definition of rishi, that if you have a different opinion, then you're a rishi. Or that you have to have a different opinion to be a rishi. It's just the way rishis are. They usually disagree with each other. It's just a statement about rishis. Well, let's say rishis and munis are basically the same thing. Okay, just, you know, two different terms. Let's not get too picky about the difference between a rishi and a muni. Let's just say sages, you know, rishi or muni. And, you know, the way sages are is that they have all sorts of big opinions and they disagree with one another a lot. Now you're asking me, is Garga Muni like that? I don't know. I don't read about him disagreeing with anybody. Maybe he does sometimes. He seems to be a nice guy, from what I read. I don't know. He seems to be a great devotee of Krishna. And I don't see him, you know, picking any quarrels with anybody. But maybe there's some other description somewhere. I don't know. Maybe you know more about the history of Garga Muni.
You told that the name is Garga
and the Muni is a title, yes. But Muni means somebody who's actually very thoughtful. Yeah, some, and rishi, basically the same idea. Someone who's a sage, who has transcendental knowledge, who actually possesses transcendental knowledge. Just like in the modern world, professor, PhD, is supposed to be a man who knows something. He's PhD, you know, authority on fruit flies. And then when on the radio show, there's some discussion of fruit flies. You know, the fruit flies are invading the city. So they call up the university and contact the professor who's an expert on fruit flies. And they bring him on the radio show because he's the expert. He has a PhD. He's the expert. He's the authority. So like that, a muni is an authority about spiritual matters. You know, they don't have universities giving out PhDs. They have ashrams where the munis train up other munis. Munis have their disciples, rishis, they have their disciples. And they dress them up like, you know, like rishis with, uncombed hair and so on. And they learn how to act like Moonies, and they learn all the Moony things, and they become Moonies by training. It's a profession. Yeah. But it means, you know, the professional duty of the Moonies is to know everything, or to know everything about spiritual matters. So Garga Moony is a Moony, but there's perfect Moonies and there's imperfect Moonies. He looks like a very perfect Moony, as far as I know. He's an exceptional Moony because he's a great devotee of Krishna.
So those who are getting this PhD degree,
yes,
consider him the Moony?
I wouldn't. I think this university education is at very best in the mode of passion. And a Moony should be in the mode of goodness. And his university education is Rajas and Tamas. Okay? Yes?
Something about another Muni.
Yeah.
Can you tell something about Narad Muni? What is his position regarding the spiritual rasa with Krishna? Because, like, he's mentioned.
What is his rasa?
Rasa, yeah, like, how his relation, like, because he's, like, we can see he's coming to Mathura and then he's in Bharata.
Oh, well, Narad Muni is a devotee of Narayana. He didn't show up in Gokula until the very end, when it was time to take Krishna away, then he shows up. So, of course, there's more confidential pastimes about Narada Muni taking up residence near Radhakunda and so on. But he likes to, you know, he's attracted to Vrindavan Leela, but his real position is in Vaikuntha. He travels everywhere, including coming to Gokula. But his primary position to Deva is Narayan. And most everybody who worships Narayan worships him in Dasya Rasa. Narayan's a very important man. He doesn't have so many close friends. Like Krishna, he's got a lot of friends, but Narayan is, you know, a little more distant. Most people worship him in Dasya Rasa. But we don't have much information to go by to judge Narada's inner mentality. We have information about his sadhana, how he regained his spiritual position and the steps of his spiritual progress. That's described in the first canto in some detail. And later on, it goes into a flashback to his previous life, I think in the ninth canto? Seventh canto. Where Narada, well, anyway, a description of Narada when he was a Gandharva in a previous life. So we have a lot of details about Narada's previous life and how he made progress in devotional service. But as far as what consciousness he attained when he became perfect, that's not for us. You know, that's his private business. We're Narada is an acharya. So we see Narada on the outside as a preacher. Same thing with Prabhupada. We can't speculate about whether Prabhupada's a gopi or a coward boy. Not our business. We know Prabhupada as acharya, as the guru. And same thing with Narada. Okay? That's our relationship with Narada. He's our guru, he's the guru, and we're the disciples. That's our relationship with him. Okay? Yes, bro?
When you have doubts, is it sometimes because of a sign of offenses?
Well, sort of, they feed on one another. Doubts cause offenses, and offenses cause doubts. Yeah, yeah. So you should stop them both, or at least try to stop one or the other. Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. You have to break the cycle of doubts, offenses, doubts. You just have to break the cycle.
That's by knowledge.
By knowledge and devotion and desperate clinging to Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna, help me! I'm trapped. Get me out of here. Sure. Don't you know the rule?
Yeah, just about Narada Muni. There's a shloka in that Narada Muni aspires for the service of Fanny Lord Chamara.
Narada does?
Yeah.
Okay. Does it say where?
It's
where he wants to do the fanning? Which lord he wants to fan? It doesn't say.
I know for
Narayan. He wants to fan Narayan.
And he speaks that I would like to fan you so that you will tell me, fan me in this way, fan me now in that way. So
yeah, and to see what happens to him. He comes to Dwarka and he gets fanned. He wants to do the fanning and he comes to visit Krishna and Krishna, you know, has him fanned. It's embarrassing for him. Yeah. Yes, sir.
There's also some really nice stories, more confidential stories. Narada acting as a friend, you know, with a little joking here and there.
Yes, that's there. I don't know if it's his main rasa, though. You know, maybe there may just be a something mixed into the, you know, something part of the mix. But it doesn't have to be his sthayi bhava. Yes, he has joking relationships with Krishna. Where I don't know. I don't know the authenticity of some of those stories. I won't relate them. Yeah. Okay, so we'll stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.